You're listening to Extra Time Radio.
David Goss is in my house. I will not let him sit on the furniture.
No.
He's sitting on the floor right now. Yeah. He doesn't get to have a chair anymore.
That's what I'm willing to do.
Hat trick for Deuce. Two hat tricks in four games.
Are you watching the games? Are you just looking at the stats?
Hodgepodge.
Yeah, there's a Mod Podge. Whole Mod Podge of rumors.
This is a transfer Mod Podge.
It is an ungodly mess.
Yeah. I'm just trying to think about what I want to say.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time, a radio on MLSsoccer.com and SiriusXMFC Channel 85. I am Andrew Wiebe. With me in, one of our mini green rooms, David Goss, and out in the octagon, Matt the Armchair Analyst Doyle. It is close to the weekend, and that is good. I am very excited about that. I don't know about you guys, but I'm even more excited because I took the pledge. I took the pledge, and I'm not sure that you guys have yet. I was looking through the Don't Cross the Line images there. Everybody puts in their picture, you know, committing to take the pledge, to not cross the line, to not discriminate in any fashion, to treat everyone with dignity and respect. And I expected to see your guys' happy faces.
Does retweeting Diego Valeri doing it? I didn't know if retweeting someone else's pledge counted as you taking the pledge.
Retweets are not endorsements, I don't think. So it's a little bit of a weird scenario there.
Do my messages not count as endorsements of Andrew Wiebe Inc.?
Andrew Wiebe Inc. is not yet – we haven't formalized the endorsement process, okay. And certainly we don't have a contract ready for you to sign as far as any sort of compensation.
So I've been working for free.
Really good misdirection here, though. You've really just taken this and turned it in circles. It was well done. Doyle, can I wait for you to be next on this train?
I just haven't submitted my headshot yet, but I'll get on top of that as soon as we're done recording.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Look, talent is one thing. Everybody can get involved with this. Go check out Don't Cross the Line. Take the pledge. As I said, it's all about ending discrimination. We want to promote an atmosphere of diversity, equality, inclusion through soccer. I hope that we do that on this show. I hope that you do that in the stadium. I hope that you do that in your daily lives.
And obviously, this is no joke.
Yeah, no, we're not messing around about that. Like, we like the kid around, but this is not a joke. So go do that. But keep listening to the show because we've got a good show coming up. The God, Kellen Acosta, with the curler, with the banger, with the 2-1 win against Pachuca in the CCL semis. FC Dallas, they're going to go to 9,000 feet down in Mexico.
Are we willing to call that goal Beckham-esque?
I'm willing to. If
first
you are.
Greece?
I don't know. I mean, it's, yeah, sure. Why not? I mean, let's not go versus Greece.
To me, it was a late bend on it that actually made it so impressive. Well, I mean, the fact that he scored is what made it impressive, but that had such late and significant bend. It was a different kind of free kick.
It was wonderful. We will talk about that in just a second. You can also stick around, though.
You're going to make me wait?
Yes, I'm going to make you wait. I know, CCL Kelly. Fever. Look, there's not an immediate cure for it, Dave. We're also going to talk undefeated squads. Yeah, I know it's two games. And also the ugly ducklings right now that don't have a W. Who's in trouble? Who do we see pulling out of that? And, of course, Bruce Arena put out his roster for the Hex. Two big games, Honduras, Panama. I mean, big may be an understatement. Massive, gigantic, enormous. We will talk to Dax McCarty about that in the second segment. He got called up, as well as the Chicago Fire, who are kind of a bandwagon team early on. And then, of course, your mail, now that I've delayed you, in on Kellen Acosta, all your praises, everything that you need to say here, Dave.
Oh, currently?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I felt like you had some big reveal there, and now
the obvious reveal is he's the greatest American soccer player to ever live. That's obvious from start one. The comparison is either Patrick Vieira, or if he chooses to play in a more advanced role, Zidane. So that's simple. Just starting there. No, but
he's more like a mixture of Claude Makélélé, Zidane, and Patrick Vieira.
I don't want to put him in the Makélélé, you know, because he scores too many goals for
that. Okay.
But he's played phenomenal start the season. The free kick, I'm pretty sure he hit a similar one against KC on the weekend, the practice game that they played against Sporting KC, and it went right over the crossbar or something like that. But you could see him working on this, and it's just another weapon that he's adding to his game. His passing looked good in this game. His energy looked good. This team came out and got smacked in the first 20 minutes by Pachuca, and I thought he was one of the players that helped them steady themselves and move forward from that, and they were lucky to only concede one. And in reality, I think it was not poor form. I think they should have won this game by more than one goal, and that might be the thing that comes back to bite.
Is this a huge missed opportunity, Doyle? Because, I mean, I looked at that scoreline, and I was excited for Dallas, but that one goal, that away goal, now you go back to Hidalgo, and it's 9,000 feet up, and you know, these guys will turn it on. This is kind of the MO for Liga MX teams in CCL. Like, the first leg sometimes goes MLS teams' way. Generally, they get smoked in the second leg.
Yeah, and I still think that's the likeliest case. I feel like this might be, oh, they, you know, it's pretty even for an hour, and then the last half hour, Pachuca just runs away. But at the same time, Dallas is a really good team. You know, this is, I think, the best team in MLS, and can play better even than they played last night, and they know they can beat Pachuca now. And look, hanging two on Pachuca is no joke. They've given up 7 goals all season. They have the best defense in Mexico. Dallas know they can get it done. So I do think they have a real shot in the second leg, but I think they got to go out early, and they got to get that road goal so that they've sort of evened things up in that regard. If they don't, if they're holding on to a 0-0 late in the game, this one could get ugly.
It could, it could. These second legs of these CONCACAF semifinals come up at the first week of April. On the flip side, Vancouver, they're not going to have it quite as easy. Tigres, we knew, were probably the best team. You heard that from Tom Marshall. He said, maybe this is the most talented team ever in Liga MX. Well, they get a 2-0 win here, and Vancouver held them off for about a little more than an hour. Kendall Watson, own goal. Claudio Vargas with a – it was a good finish.
Eduardo
Vargas.
I'm throwing first names in all sorts
you
of
You thought it was
places.
Claudio Bieler because of the way it was hit.
Yeah, very much so. Very good throwback reference there. But cleans it up, gets someone in the 87th minute. 2-0 Tigres. They're going to go back to Vancouver. There was no Kakuta Mane in this one. Breck Shea had a chance that he missed on the breakaway. Breakaway? Did I just say that? Yeah. I hope I did.
You did. It's a new thing.
Yeah, it is. Also, he...
it's a new thing, but it will never happen.
Yeah, he got a 10 from the Olympic judges for quite
the
dive.
He got a 0.0 for that dive.
I mean, hey, the landing was pretty good. Do they have a shot? Does Vancouver have a chance of turning this around? Is there any way?
No. If they had gotten... Look, Breck had that one chance that he completely flubbed, and then Nicolas Mosquita got into the area twice and had a couple of chances that he wasn't able to put away. One of those had to fall. If one of those fell, then you'd say, okay, they have a puncher's chance, but going home 2-0 down against a team that now doesn't have to attack, if they get one, they, you know, then the Caps have to score 4. I can't talk myself into this being realistic. I think the best you can hope for is that they keep it close, that Freddy Montero plays better, and that they show a little bit more flexibility. Because I thought in this one, the first 45 minutes from Vancouver were pretty good. And then Tuca Ferretti made a sub, you know, put on an extra midfielder, switched to sort of a 4-3-3. Once he did that, there was just no adjustment from the Caps. And with guys getting between the lines like that, it forced Matias Laba to become a guy who protects rather than a guy who sort of destroys. And that just completely put Vancouver on the back foot. And so it's not a series that they're going to win, but it is one they can learn from. And I think that is the way you have to approach it.
No doubt about that. Look, as I said, first week in April, that's when these second legs go down. Everything to play for, anything can happen. But I'm a little bit like James Chelminski, who hit us on Twitter and said, hey, I've seen this script before, guys. I've been heartbroken too many times. I can't get invested just yet. I'm invested, but I'm holding off, sort of like KU fans in March. That's a few weeks away, though. On to week 3 in MLS. Round 3, MLS fight. Look, there's I hesitate here because I got confronted the other day in this office by someone who was saying, quit coming at us with these takes after 2 weeks. You guys on Extra Time Radio, you're jumping to conclusions. You want to put too much on 180 minutes.
Did they not give the trophy away yet?
Yeah, I mean, like, what are we supposed to do here? And you look at this week, and I'm trying to think of ways that we don't go that route, but I want to get on the Houston bandwagon. I want to do it. I want to believe that Chicago Fire might actually be good. I want to believe that the Earthquakes, despite the fact they played 2 games at home against 10-man teams, could actually be good. Is there a cautionary tale here, Doyle? Like, where's our middle ground? Should we have a middle ground?
Yeah, I mean, just go back 12 months. At this time last year, Montreal was the best team in the league. The Red Bulls were by far the worst. A certain orange team from Texas had got off to an impressive start. Things change a lot. But I think in terms of a top down, like seeing the entire forest change, I think that more MLS teams went into this year having an identity and knowing what they wanted to do than in years past. So I don't know. Like I understand why you got harassed for having takes, but I do think that we're seeing kind of a different MLS in 2017 than in even the recent past.
You're going to get some answers too. Timbers versus Houston, that's going to give you some answers. Houston first time on the road. San Jose going to Sporting KC, that'll give you some answers. Seattle hosting New York. I mean, when you look at these teams, you ask questions. I think there's a question mark around Atlanta, of course, and Chicago. I think all those games are going to give you little bits of answers of how they step up in big games, especially San Jose, Houston. First times they're going on the road this season.
Yeah. Yeah, it's going to be tough. Look, and Clyde in Virginia kind of pointed this out. He said, hey, guys, do you think San Jose and Houston are as good as their highlight reels suggest? I mean, offensively, he says, they look scary. But he also has the caveat, yeah, it's two games and they're at home.
Well,
like, who's the more for real team there, do you think? Like, is it Houston or is it San Jose? If we're looking like 2-3 months down the line and we're saying, wow, they kept it up, who has the better chance of doing it?
I was going to say neither.
Oh,
I think that
okay, that's
Houston's,
fine. That's an acceptable answer.
I think Houston's
answer.
Highlight reels are for real and that they will continue to cause these highlights, but I don't think either team will be sitting on the top two or three of the Western Conference in 2 months.
Any chance they're even in the playoff spots, Doyle? Or is this a fade? Is this a hard fade?
Oh, it's MLS, so there's always a chance. But I don't think it's a great chance all the reasons you just listed. That said, both teams are unquestionably more talented than in the recent past. So I think the fan bases are right to kind of ride this wave a little bit and just try to enjoy it.
We will see what happens, of course. A couple Honduran internationals on Houston that we've been watching with a lot of glee. Of course, La Pantera, Albert Elise, and Romo Kyoto. Well, Dax McCarty may have a couple comments on those guys in the second segment. They will be taking on the U.S. on the 24th. He's part of that roster. Yeah, we'll talk about that in just a second.
What about Anibal Godoy going head-to-head with that midfield?
Boy, there's a lot of – yeah, you're right. The CONCACAF talent is on the come-up in MLS right now. There's also some winless teams.
What, did you just notice that?
I knew that. There's also some winless teams. There's 12 of them right now. Still, it's just 2 weeks in, so they got some time here. When you're looking at this, you have any worries here? Who's worrying the most right now, Doyle? And once again, I'm okay with second week hot takes, third week hot takes. Who's the team that's just kind of stumbling over their own feet and you don't think they'll get out of their own way this year?
Do you mean besides Minnesota United?
Yes.
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
Yeah.
Their feet are tied up right now. They're like, yeah, they're bound and I'm not going to finish that.
They're not doing so great. I think the Galaxy have to be worried. They have been on the wrong side of some bad luck, but other teams are just dropping points. LA are dropping home points to conference foes. Those are 6-pointers, and they matter just as much in March as they do in September and October. I think LA is in some serious trouble, and they haven't, because of the reluctance to develop the kids, to give them meaningful minutes over the last few years, they don't have this wealth of talent coming up that you can be entirely confident of in the way that Dallas and New York do. So I'm very worried about the Galaxy if I'm a Galaxy fan right now.
I'd say Columbus. I think part of it because they have so many pieces in place already that you'd think they could start a little bit stronger. And I think part of it because at some point, you know, when you get into a funk, and they were in a funk last year, so it for them becomes a continuation of last year rather than, we've played 2 or 3 bad games. You know, DC United, I think, looks at it and they say, we haven't hit our spot yet, but that's fine. Columbus, you start to worry mentally, psychologically within the team. Of course, Mensa has to get settled in. They got a new left back. Higuain was out injured. So there are pieces that are coming back and moving around for them as well, but it worries me. Because you talk about it. I mean, Greg Berhalter was in the conversation for national team, is in the conversation for national team manager. And on the flip side, his team was struggling last year, and they continue to this year.
But you've seen how quickly that kind of your fate can fall in that sense. Jason Christ being an example, who was so high, had some tough years, and now is back to rebuilding. I mean, the crew, Cruci, I should say, excuse me, they're not rebuilding. But Jonathan Mensah was a big gambit. That was a big play, and that was a play that came down from the top. That one has to work out, and they won't have him this weekend after that red card suspension. I'm looking at RSL personally. I think they've got a weird mix right now. They're probably 1-2 years away from being at that top level in the West if they're going to get to it. I just think the youth and the veterans, it's not quite meshing. I'm not sure Jura is going to have that bounce back season.
I fully disagree with you.
Really?
Also, shout out to
Sergio. You're all about Albert Rusnak? You're on that hype train?
Well, I actually think he'll be quite good. I don't think we've seen the best of him, but they've
That's just obvious.
Had so many injuries. I mean, they haven't played a real center back outside of David Horst in the last 2 weeks. Like, they have – they're missing Plata last week. Jordan Allen goes out in the first
And that's why
minutes.
You think they're on the upswing.
I think that I wouldn't panic because they have the potential to be much better.
Fair
and
enough.
I actually think Rusnak's going to be a nice player if Jura can finish. Also, shout out to Section 35 at RSL. I bought a scarf off them. They're doing good stuff.
If you believe. Last game we'll talk about here before we get to Dax McCarty and the U.S. national team. Seattle Red Bulls Sunday, 7 p.m. Eastern on FS1. It's your only game on Sunday, so mark out those 2 hours. You don't have the four-hour block to figure out here. Roman Torres is suspended. The disciplinary committee came out and got him. He had a little kick out there in the game against Montreal. A deserved suspension in my book. Neither team really out of first gear. Red Bulls have 6 points, but that game against Colorado, you mentioned it. I mean, it's not a throwaway. It's 3 points, but it's hard to tell much from that match. And then the first match that came back, obviously. Seattle still just 1 point. What's not firing, though, for Seattle, Doyle? Because these are the champs. I mean, look, I don't want to be cliche with the hangover thing. I don't think that's really where we want to go with this.
Oh, Doyle.
But the...
I saw you battling some people on Twitter that you did want to go there.
Oh, you did?
Yeah,
huh?
I think it's pretty clearly a championship hangover. They just look a little sluggish. It's not unlike what we saw from Portland at the start of last year and what we saw from L.A. the year before that and even Sporting KC in the start of 2014. This is what happens when teams win MLS Cup. This is what happens in any league when teams win the title. Pat Riley wrote a freaking book about it. You know, this is not unusual. I think being down to their third string right back is part of it. I think Torres may be regressing to the mean in terms of being looking more like the player he actually is instead of the player that he appeared to be at the end of last season. Has something to do with it as well. But overall, if I'm Seattle, I'm not worried. They still have, you know, second or third most talent in the league, and they're going to be fine.
And the way they came back against Montreal was showing what all those pieces were capable of. Roldan played well. You know, Lodero gets the goal off the PK. But just the guys that played well to get them to that run showed that it wasn't just they were wearing the glass slipper for that playoff run. Like, they have that quality.
Yeah, for sure. Still trying to mix Dempsey back in. Still trying to figure that out.
He's really good at
they're
soccer.
They're going to take some Advil, drink some Pedialyte. They'll get rid of that hangover soon enough. Seattle Red Bulls Sunday, 7 p.m. Eastern, FS1. We're going to go to break. When we come back, Bruce Arena's first Hex roster, as well as Dax McCarty, the Chicago Fire. Wait, that sounds weird.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com or tweet at extratime radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Back now on Extra Time Radio, Andrew Wiebe, David Goss. And in the octagon, the armchair analyst, Matt Doyle. You know him well. We're talking U.S. national team because Bruce's roster is out. Big games on the 24th and 28th in San Jose against Honduras, and then down in Panama City against Panama. Two games the U.S. needs. Not in a position where they feel comfortable right now. Not just comfortable, but a little bit of trouble for the U.S. He calls in a roster that I think, you know, there's some obvious stuff in here that we understand. You know, the goalkeepers, Guzan, Howard, Raimondo. On the back line, DeMarcus Beasley, who I feel like will be here until somebody forcibly removes him. John Brooks, Jeff Cameron, Omar Gonzalez. Villafania gets a chance here. Walker Zimmerman gets a chance. Then Orozco and Ream as well, which are a little bit ponderous. And then Acosta, Bedoya, Bradley, Jones, Johnson, Legette, McCarty, Nagby, Pulisic in the midfield. And then up top, Josie, Clint, Jordan Morris, and Bobby Wood. But the names I didn't read off there, who you're looking at your fingers, you're counting, you're saying, Sasha and Benny, where are those guys? Where's DeAndre Yedlin? Well, on the Yedlin side, he's hurt. Sasha and Benny aren't here. Doyle, this has to be a 4-4-2. I don't see it any other way. When you don't call in a number 10, other than maybe Pulisic in a pinch, it's got to be going that way. But that seems like a strange departure from when we talked to Bruce when he was here, and he was saying, hey, we want to play more. I like Sasha. I like Benny. He plays them in the January friendlies, and then no show. What do you make of this?
Yeah, it's interesting, and I'm a little disappointed and frustrated by it. I do think at this point we can say that Pulisic is not just a number 10 in a pinch. When you start in a must-win Champions League game and, you know, putting up a goal and an assist as that number 10 for Borussia Dortmund, I think Bruce is casting his lot with the kid. He's saying this is the guy who's going to run the show. That said, I do think it is going to be a 4-4-2, sort of with a kind of like a box midfield, the old what we used to call the empty bucket, with the playmakers sort of going. We think of playmakers, number 10s, being sort of inside-out players, guys who start in the middle and then drift to the wings if they need to find space, kind of like what Sasha Kljestan did last year for the Red Bulls. I think the more modern interpretation is guys who start on the wings and drift inside when they need to get on the ball a little bit more, which is how Pulisic has mostly played for Dortmund. It's how Fabian Johnson plays quite a bit for Borussia Mönchengladbach. It's how Darlington Nagby plays for the Portland Timbers right now. And it's arguably how you can play Sebastian Lletget and Alejandro Bedoya as well. So Bruce's argument, I'm sure, would be like, hey, we do have number 10s. They're maybe not the guys you thought they would be. I would, you know, turn my nose up at that. But
that was exactly what he said, because in his comments after, someone brought up Pulisic in the same way that Wiebe did, and he said, well, I don't think it's just him. I think we have, literally said, Lletget, I think we have Bedoya, guys that can play that final pass. So if he goes with a formation like that, but more to Doyle's point, guys that can do that on the field, wherever it is that they get set up, and one of those in Lletget and Bedoya might get stuck next to Bradley in a partnership. And then you got two guys that can go back and forth, two guys that can play the ball side to side, that can play a final pass. Neither of them are true number 10s, but both of them can keep the ball moving. And I think you've got four in the attacking, because don't forget, Fabian Johnson on the wing might be as good an attacking player as the U.S. has had over the last 5 years.
Are we saying Bobby Wood and Josie Altidore up top? Is that what we're assuming here? I mean, Clint Dempsey's getting 90 for the Sounders, but it would seem a little strange for me for him to get in the starting lineup. But then again, this is for all the marbles right now. Like, you got to get into the World Cup. And Bruce, if he's going to trust somebody, I feel like he's going to trust Clint in a big game.
I think so, too. I understand that Clint hasn't looked his sharpest, but he's still Clint Dempsey. You know, like to me, if he's healthy and good to go, you probably need to have him on the field. But you know, Bruce is Bruce. He said the other day on Fox on FS1, you know, we're going to use him in a different role. He's going to be a 15-20 minute a game sub, and if that's the way it ends up going, and it very well could, it's a luxury to have that guy coming off the bench. But it would make me nervous. I don't want to see the U.S. start these games without Clint Dempsey on the field.
I think it'd be crazy to not start Bobby Wood and Josie Altidore. When you see the goals Bobby Wood's scoring right now and the way Josie's played over the last 6 months and the way they've looked together under Jurgen, maybe even at times when the field was a little confusing, I can't find a way to not put those two up top, especially when you look at the way this formation is going to come together.
Yep. When you get the job, Dave, you will play Bobby, you'll play Josie up top together all the time. Until then, we will wait until Friday.
I'm going to play Dom Dwyer up top.
Good point, because Dom Dwyer is a citizen now. He got his citizenship today. He can play anytime. What do you think? I mean, is this a guy who could actually move into this team?
I think it's a guy, Doyle. I think we're looking at the Gold Cup, right? Which is another qualifying after this, and then you go into that club. I think that's the roster where we see him first.
Yeah, I think so, too. I think that the U.S. has some good depth up top, and if Dom's going to break into that, he's going to have a big summer. And I think anything before that is premature.
Yeah, a big summer in MLS, a big summer in the Gold Cup. Got to score goals to break into that group. On Friday, the U.S. hosting Honduras at Avaya Stadium. That game's on FS1 and Unimas. It's at 10:30 p.m. Eastern. Definitely one that you're going to watch because the stakes are super, super high. Dax McCarty is going to be there. Dax McCarty of the Chicago Fire is going to be there, which still sounds weird to me. Are you everything good? You're a member of the Fire. You've come to terms with this change. Your life has moved on, I assume.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Life goes on no matter what it has in store for you. The sun rises the next day. So, yeah, mentally, physically, emotionally, everything moved on. You know, all settled in Chicago. My wife is been enjoying the city, you know, getting used to our surroundings and obviously, you know, the team. It's a good group of guys. It's been easy to come into a locker room and get along with everyone. It's a good group of guys, but also a hungry group of guys, a group of guys that wants to win and wants to prove that the past couple seasons, you know, have been unacceptable and we're ready to change it.
You come into that locker room and it's a new experience for you. Is there anyone there that you were close with already that's a touchstone, or do you come in and like beat up the toughest guy?
No. I'm a tough guy in a fight, but no, that's not my style when I come into a new team. I tried to, honestly, the way I went about it was I did know a couple of guys from previously before. I played college soccer at UNC with Michael Harrington. I played in FC Dallas for a couple years with Arturo Alvarez. You know, two guys I know well and guys that, you know, helped me assimilate into the team pretty easily. Two veteran guys, two guys that want to win just as badly as anyone. So, you know, I came the first couple weeks, I kind of just observed, you know, I didn't want to step on anyone's toes. I observed and I tried to see where I fit in the team and how my role would be in terms of leadership, in terms of playing style, all that stuff. You know, I've taken it upon myself now that the season started to kind of have my voice heard a little bit more. And obviously I think this group has a number of good veteran guys, good leaders, some new guys that have come in, obviously Janino and Nemanja Nikolic, guys who have been successful elsewhere and good pros. So it's going to be, you know, a committed, you know, focused team effort to try to get us back to where we deserve to be, which is among the elite in MLS. And this is a club that has a lot of history and a lot of tradition. So they, you know, they certainly shouldn't be at the cellar of MLS.
A big game this weekend against expansion hopefuls Atlanta United. That's in Atlanta. I believe you just checked into your hotel there. Uni Mas is the network for that one, 4 p.m. Eastern on Saturday, a big game. Before we get to that, though, Dax, I heard you mention the Tar Heels. You may change teams professionally, but I got to assume you're always a Tar Heel. Did you go with the homer bracket? Did you pick your boys all the way?
Always a Tar Heel, and I did. I did. I chose UNC all the way. I was disappointed with how they ended the ACC tournament, obviously losing to Duke, our biggest rival. So, you know, I decided that in my you know, logical thinking was that they're going to be hungry to redeem themselves. They're going to be hungry to prove that was just a bad performance and a bad game. A couple of guys have UNC beaten Duke in the final in their brackets. That's not me. I have Duke going to the Final Four, but losing to Arizona. I have UNC Arizona in the final. So I'm hoping my boys can come through for me. I need this street cred.
So how are you doing it in the locker room with this? Does everybody do it? I mean, is Juninho doing an NCAA bracket? Are you guys putting down, you know, wooden coins, quote unquote, for the winner? How are you doing
this? I think a bunch of guys are doing the bracket. Our team manager Alex is the guy that's running everything, and he just got a bunch of brackets in late last night. So I'm not quite sure how many guys are in the pool, but I know it's always a fun little session, banter session when you start figuring out what guys picked who and the upsets. I already had a little back and forth with Michael Harrington. He took Notre Dame and I took Princeton, and he has Notre Dame going far. I think he's got Notre Dame going all the way to the Elite Eight. So I was just rooting on Princeton hard like they were my own school, but they ended up blowing it for me in the end. I'm not happy about it.
Didn't get it done. Anybody who picked KU to win this thing, you know right now that they're losing this. As an alumni, I know there's no way, no more homer brackets for me. I will be tuning in.
Oh,
though.
Yeah?
Yeah, man, I can't. It's like CCL.
You're doing the reverse jinx right
yeah,
now. You're
for sure.
You're doing the reverse jinx, and I'm I see right through you, Weeby.
Yeah.
I know what you're trying to do here, and it's not going to work on me.
He thinks he's so smart too. Like, I'm going to get my heart broken.
It's like
knowing
CCL. Like,
yeah,
they're
like,
going to win.
You can't believe.
Let me down so much before, so now I have them going out in the first round.
Yeah.
Like they, you know. Come on, I know that game.
Fine, I have them in the
Final
Four.
I know you think that deep down they're going to win.
Yeah, I hope, but I don't believe. There's no way that I believe. Look, I think that the game on Saturday, though, with you guys, Atlanta-Chicago, I believe that's going to be a good game because I know Atlanta have some horses and you guys are on the upswing. They don't look like an expansion team a lot of the time, and I know we have 180 minutes, so it's really not much of a sample size, but when you look at their squad and what they did in Minnesota, what did you think about them?
Yeah, it was very impressive. I think just in general, the whole vibe and the whole buzz that they've created amongst not only the city of Atlanta, but amongst the MLS and amongst the U.S. is impressive. And you have to say, for me, you know, being in the league as long as I have, it feels a lot like, you know, Seattle Sounders, but, you know, Seattle has had that history and tradition, whereas Atlanta, you know, they kind of started everything from scratch. And I think that the first thing they did right was they went out and they got experienced American got MLS guys to build the roster. And by that, I mean guys like Carlos Bocanegra, guys like Paul McDonough, guys that have been through this before, especially with a guy like Paul McDonough, who did it with Orlando. And he it seems like he's learned from that experience tremendously, you know. And when you have an owner like Arthur Blank, a guy who kind of just says, look, here's some blank checks. Like, let's go get some of the best up and coming young players we can get. Let's go sign one of the, you know, the premier, you know, coaches in world football. I mean, these are signs of intent by Atlanta, and it's impressive. It's, I don't think it's going to be a perfect season for them by any means. I think they'll experience their ups and downs like every MLS team does, whether it's injuries or call-ups, salary cap restraints, because of, you don't know how deep their roster is until you really hit the summer and they have injuries and suspensions and all that stuff to come up. But what they're doing now is impressive. I thought they played very well against my old team, the New York Red Bulls. I thought that was a very exciting game. You know, I had a sneaking feeling that Atlanta would run out of gas there at the end and the Red Bulls would be able to come out on top. That's just kind of how, you know, the New York's identity has been for the past couple of years. But the way that Atlanta played those first 65, 70 minutes against them was really impressive. And to me, it's almost more impressive than what they did against Minnesota, because I know Minnesota is an expansion team and all that, but the conditions in Minnesota made for kind of a weird game. And obviously Atlanta came out and I think they were like, they scored 6 goals on like 8 shots or something ridiculous like that. So certainly that type of efficiency won't, you know, be carrying them through the rest of the season. But for me, what stands out is obviously their attacking players. They have some unbelievable weapons at their disposal, some really young, exciting prospects. You know, Martinez and Almiron and Assad, these guys are guys that are dangerous all in their own right, and they're very fast. So that's the one thing that I think is kind of been synonymous with Tata Martino's sides, is they attack with a lot of pace, and they are very direct. You know, they can keep possession pretty well, but I think they're very similar to the Red Bulls in that they want to get to goal as fast as they possibly can. So it's a big challenge for us in Chicago. I think, you know, we've had a good start to the season, but I think we've played 2 games, and I think we've put together 2 really good halves of soccer and 2 not so good halves of soccer. And so we need to figure out a way to be able to put together a full 90 minutes of an important game, because if not, Atlanta can make you pay.
Before we dig into Chicago, you mentioned the experienced MLS guys that Atlanta brought in to build this team. They also brought in some experienced MLS guys on the roster to kind of help guide this along. Jeff Laurentiis, Michael Parkhurst, guys in the league as expansion teams are building, and we know there's more coming, as Don Garber said, veterans around the league. When you talk about and see moves start to happen, you know, as Minnesota and Atlanta start to build, LAFC the next one, is everyone talking about, I wonder if I could end up there? Like, I wonder if that's an option for me. Like, what's the conversation around these expansion teams?
Yeah, of course. I mean, when you're a veteran guy and you've been around MLS long enough, you know that literally anything can happen. I think I've experienced that in my career. I experienced that this offseason. MLS is unique that way, in that essentially, you know, unless you're some, you know, stud DP with a no trade clause or something like that, literally anything can happen in MLS. You can end up anywhere. So I think with expansion teams, you always look at how they're building the rosters. You look at, you know, what kind of money the owner's trying to spend. You look at the DPs they bring in. But as far as the veteran guys, the MLS guys that Atlanta brought in, I think Michael Parkhurst, you start with him and you say right there, that's a great move for them. You get a guy who's not only really experienced, but just a very good player in general. Experienced guy, was on a very successful team in Columbus and in New England. He's played in numerous MLS Cups, and he's just a guy who gets it. He gets the league, and he gets how it works, and he understands what it takes to be on a winning team. And then you look at other additions they made, guys like Jeff Laurentiis, guys like Tyrone Mears. These are all moves that I think every expansion team, you know, they should be following that mold of, you know, there's no perfect science, right? There's no perfect way to do it, because I know it's hard for expansion teams coming into the MLS, but they went out and got a guy in Tyron Mears who had just won MLS Cup, Michael Parkhurst, like I said, been to 5 MLS Cups or 4 MLS Cups, something like that, and been on winning teams. A guy like Jeff Lorenowitz, constantly been on winning teams. So I think those moves in general are just as important as going out and signing the exciting DPs and the young guys and the guys who everyone's going to talk about. I think just as important are the guys who people don't talk about as much.
A lot of people talking about Juninho. I saw that as you came in. I saw your partnership for the first time here in this game against RSL, and I thought, is this part of Dax's deal? Like, he needs a Brazilian next to him in midfield? I mean, what's the deal? Tell us about Juninho, and do you have a preference nationally for your partners in midfield?
Yeah, that's certainly something that you would assume, right? But then again, you look at some of my earlier days at Red Bull and at DC United and at Dallas, and I've had a lot of international flavor in there, a lot of different partners, you know, American guys, Eric Alexander, Daniel Hernandez, and then you got like Colombian guys, David Ferreira, Australians, Tim Cahill, not really center mid, but played in there a little bit. You know, you got a lot of options. I like to think that I'm a guy who can adapt to plenty of different nationalities, but it certainly seems like Brazilian is the flavor of the month these days. But I tell you what, I've said this numerous times in interviews before when I was talking about myself and Juninho, but I've had a tremendous admiration for him as a player throughout my time in MLS. You know, he was probably one of the most underrated players in the league, especially being on those LA Galaxy teams. No one ever really talked about him, but he was the glue that held those great teams together. Guys like him, guys like AJ De La Garza, you know, Omar obviously was a stud, and Beckham and Keane and Donovan. Those are all the guys that get the headlines, and rightfully so, but those guys like Juninho and AJ, you know, different players, they're the glue that makes sure that team keeps ticking. So for me, it was an honor when I found out I was getting traded to Chicago to know that, hey, at least I'll be playing in the middle with a guy who I have a tremendous amount of respect for. And you can see in training, you know, he's just a quality player. It shows you, I guess, how tough it is to make it in Mexico when a guy as good as him, you know, hasn't been getting as many games as you'd expect. But you know, Tijuana's loss is our gain, and he's going to make our team stronger. And I think our partnership is still young, and it still has plenty of room to get better. And so I think as the season wears on, I think we're going to get a lot better.
You talk about that season wearing on. What are the next month or two, what are the keys for this team in building its identity? And from your time in the league, what's the ceiling look like for this season?
Yeah, I think the key for us is going to be to continue to figure out as a team what makes us good and what doesn't make us good. I think we're still trying to find an identity as a team. You know, we're very dangerous in transition, but is that all we are? You know, are we just going to be a dangerous transition team, or are we going to be able to put together large stretches of games where we can keep possession and you know, keep the ball for, you know, 15, 20 pass buildups and get a shot on goal? You know, are we going to be able to defend like we defended in the second half against Real Salt Lake without conceding? I mean, we defended a lot in that second half against Salt Lake. They had a lot of possession. The thing that, you know, was upsetting was that, you know, we didn't do enough to kill the game off, but we also defended very well. And our center backs and our back line in general put out a lot of fires before it got to our goal. So are we going to be a team that kind of defends like that? So we're still, I think, learning about ourselves, learning about, you know, the different things that are going to make us good as a team. For me, what I would like to see from us is a team that's dangerous in transition, because we have some really dangerous players going forward, guys like Arturo Alvarez and David Akam with his speed, and the strikers that we have, Michael Dalou and Nemanja Nikolic and Lucho Solignac. These are guys who we can score goals on the break, and we can certainly do that. So now I think the next evolution for us as a team is, are we going to be a team that can possess the ball a little bit better? Are we going to be a team that's going to be confident playing out of the back? You know, when you have midfielders like me and Juninho, we're going to want the ball always to our feet. But, you know, can we find the right balance between playing out of the back and also, you know, playing direct when teams are pressing us, and then figuring out, you know, within the game how to manage everything when we're down a goal, when we're up a goal? These are all things that we have to get better at. And so I think in a month or two, we'll start to figure out more about our identity. But what I would like to see from us is a team that can close out games, because this team in the past has really struggled to close out games when we've had a lead. And I think a lot of guys have said last year, 2-0 up at halftime against Salt Lake, we would have given that game away. That would have been 2-2. in the last minute, you know, we wouldn't have had the mental fortitude to close that game out. But it shows that we're learning. You know, we have guys that are starting to understand, I think, a little bit more what it takes to win. And that's going to be important for this long season.
A lot of people milling around the Chicago Fire bandwagon right now, Dax. Just waiting to get on, waiting to see some results, the next opportunity.
Hey, there's room. Yeah, there's
I know, man. We're waiting.
We'll see how this game against Atlanta goes. Maybe a couple other guys will hop on. Maybe not. We'll see.
I got 1 foot on. I'm just waiting to see what happens here, as you said, the next month or two. 4 p.m., Atlanta, Chicago, watch it on Uni Moss. Let's talk U.S. national team, Dax. You get the call up here for these huge, huge hex qualifiers, Honduras and Panama. Honduras really a must win in just about every definition if this team wants to get to the promise land, which I think is the expectation. Nobody's even thinking about it any other way. When did you know? Did you have a feeling that you would be on this roster? And then give me an idea of what you see your role as with this team right now.
Okay, yeah, I think the answer to your first question is you never really know until you know. And I can't really break it down any simpler than that. But you have inklings, you have ideas, you speak to the coaches and the staff members. And I think the one thing that you know, this staff has done really well is they've stayed in constant contact with all the guys in the pool, all the guys in Europe, all the guys in MLS, all the guys in Mexico. The whole coaching staff has done a great job of making sure that guys know where they stand. And so I'd say about 3 or 4 days before the Columbus game, I spoke with Bruce and he just asked me how I was settling in, how things are going, and just said, hey, you know, we were happy with, you know, what you did in January camp and we're just going to be monitoring your games closely. You know, Pat Noonan, he flew out to Columbus to watch that game. And I met with Pat after the game and just, you know, caught up with him a little bit and just, you get an idea that, hey, like, you know, keep playing well and your chances of making the team are pretty good. But at the end of the day, you never really know until you know, because, you know, there's so many good players that are playing for the U.S. these days, young guys, older guys, guys in Europe, it's hard to know what the preference of the coach will be in that moment. So I'm an older guy, you know, 29 and I don't have any World Cup qualifying experience, but to me, I've got good experience in MLS. I've played for the national team before. And I think the one thing that Bruce likes about me is that, you know, I'm not afraid of the moment. You know, I understand that these are huge games, very big games. And I think in terms of my role, you know, who knows? It's going to be interesting to get into camp and see what type of formation Bruce wants to play, what type of tactics he wants to have. I totally agree with you that it's a must-win game. There's no question about that. But I like that pressure, and I think guys in the U.S. in general enjoy that pressure. I think everyone that was a part of those qualifiers against Mexico and Costa Rica knows that, you know, those performances weren't good enough, and certainly if we're going to have a good run and make it to the World Cup again like we expect, we're going to have to play better. So for me, my role is whatever Bruce, you know, sees in me. I mean, obviously Michael Bradley's the captain, the leader of the team. You know, I'm pretty much in direct competition with him as a defensive midfielder. And so I think it'll be a fun competition, depending on if Bruce wants to go 1D mid, if he wants to go 2D mids, that's all things that are up for debate. So we won't really know until we get there. But for me, my main focus is just to help the team. I mean, I think that's a role that, you know, I'm used to. You guys know me from my time at New York. I mean, I was never really the guy in the spotlight all the time with all the big name players we had. I just want to make sure that I do my job. I help the team win. I try to do the little things that maybe don't show up on the stat sheet, you know, to help the team be better and let the attacking players and the talented guys we have going forward shine. I mean, that's kind of the role as a defensive midfielder. And if you do your job as a D mid, then, you know, you're not going to be getting all the plaudits, but your attacking guys will be, and that'll be good enough for me. So hopefully we'll be able to score some goals against Honduras and against Panama, and hopefully we win. If I don't play a minute and we win both games, then I'll consider the camp a big success.
You were part of the January camp with a lot of the domestic guys, now a lot of the European guys coming in to join this team. What was the vibe like in that camp, though? What was it like under Bruce, an opportunity to work under him, and what do you expect from the Europeans coming over?
Yeah, it was a great vibe. It was a great vibe in camp. I think Bruce has done a good job communicating that, you know, we're going to get back to basics under him. You know, we're going to make sure that we're proud to wear the jersey. We're a team that knows what we're good at. You know, we're not going to – I think Bruce, you know, for the most part, knows that he doesn't want to be a guy that is going to mess around with formations and complicate things. He wants to make it as simple as possible for the guys getting on the field so that if everyone gets on the field, they know what their job is, they know what their role is, and it's going to be easy for guys to understand that. So the January camp was great, good vibes. I mean, obviously a lot of freedom. When you were out training, he wanted you to train hard. He wanted you to put the work in. But then when you had downtime, relax, go leave the hotel, get dinner with your teammates, get to know guys off the field a little bit better. So just, you know, from everything I've heard about Bruce, from how he used to be in the past, very similar. Just wants to create a good atmosphere where guys go out on the field and play their best for him. I think that's the one thing that Bruce does almost better than any manager I've had, is he knows the right buttons to push to get the best out of the players that play for him. So January camp obviously was a success. I mean, it was a frustrating two games against Serbia and Jamaica, obviously teams that defended really deep and weren't able to find goals. Goals were hard to come by, especially Serbia was 0-0 and Jamaica 1-0. But overall, really, really beneficial camp, and especially for some guys like myself and Sebastian Legette, Walker Zimmerman, Jorge Villafania, guys that maybe haven't been given as much of a chance in the national team. You know, we were given a chance, and Bruce obviously was happy with what he saw.
You have TV, just like we do. You have cable, Dax. I assume you do. It's hooked up in Chicago. You probably get Fox Soccer, which means you're probably watching Christian Pulisic every now and then. It sounds like you're one of those guys that is watching games in your downtime. What do you think about this kid, about the difference maker he's become at such a young age, at such a big club? I mean, that's got to be exciting across the – not only in the kind of the fan sphere, but also in the player sphere, to see a guy who developed in the U.S., go overseas and do this at such a young age.
Yeah, it's impressive. Certainly, I've certainly watched a couple of the games that Dortmund has played. You know, it's a young, exciting team, and it's a team that I think everyone can be impressed with when you watch them play. And the one thing with Pulisic, I mean, I don't know him personally. I've only seen him play a few times. The one thing that really impresses me the most about him is he has no fear. He has no fear of the moment. Doesn't matter who he's playing against, whether it's Real Madrid or a third-tier German team in the German Cup. He doesn't have any fear, you know, and he plays with a youthful vigor that I think everyone can be impressed with. So he's a wonderful combination of speed, technical ability, and I think his soccer IQ is very high. He reads the game really well for a kid his age. Don't want to put too much pressure on him, obviously, but he certainly has the capacity and the potential to be, you know, one of the top players ever for the U.S. men's national team, but one of the top players in the world. And, you know, that's saying a lot, putting a lot of pressure on his shoulders. But for me, he seems like the type of kid that embraces that. He seems like the type of guy that doesn't really let many things faze him. Seems like he's really humble, easygoing guy. So it'll be awesome to meet him in person and you know, obviously see what he's like on the field.
Couple big games for the U.S., the 24th and 28th. First up in San Jose against Honduras. Really a huge, huge game. Dax, a guy you are familiar with, and I've been wanting to ask you about him really ever since he got into this kind of U-20 team and started shining, but maybe even all the way back to last playoffs when we're sitting around talking about soccer in the studio. Tyler Adams, people are saying he has a chance to really make an impact on the Red Bulls this year. What did you see from this kid the last couple?
Yeah, he's a beast. Tyler, he's a scary guy. He's an angry guy. You know, he's an angry youngster, and I like that about him. That's how I was when I was young. But yeah, Tyler, he's a great kid. I think the good thing about him is he is hungry to learn and hungry to get better. His physical tools are about 10 times better than mine ever were or ever will be. Physically, he's just a machine. You know, I've always been a fit guy, and I've always been able to run all day, but he's at a totally different level. I don't know, his lungs are like the size of his entire chest or something like that. I don't know what his parents feed him, but yeah, he's a beast. And the thing about him that's so impressive is that, kind of similar to Pulisic, he doesn't let the occasion faze him at all. He's not scared of anything. He's not scared of playing against any player. And I think the good thing about him is he respects his opponent, but he doesn't respect him too much to the point where he's afraid of playing. So I think he's got a really, really bright future ahead of him. I think that, you know, his ability in the midfield to not only cover a ton of ground, but dictate the pace of the game and be physical in there. He's an enforcer. He's almost, you know, you don't want to put too much pressure on him. He's almost kind of like a mini Conte in that, you know, you can almost play with him as a sole defensive midfielder and get away with it because of the amount of ground he covers and because of his defensive instincts and because of how good he is in one-on-one situations. So again, the Red Bulls have a very good player in Tyler Adams coming through the academy, coming through the first team right now. I'm sure he'll get a lot of playing time this year. I know that they're very high on him, and he's going to make their team better for sure. There's no question in my mind that he's got the capacity to be one of the top players.
Taking you away from Chicago for a moment, but looking big picture, we're 2 weeks in. We know you watch a lot of games. We know you talk to everyone in the league. What's interested you so far, or what are you excited to watch coming along this MLS season?
Oh, well, let's see. There's a bunch of things. I obviously watch the league, you know, a lot, and I'm a big fan of MLS. So I've been really impressed with Houston. Houston Dynamo have been a team that have impressed me. I mean, obviously they've been at home. You know, two teams that weren't great last year, but seem to have done really well this year. Houston and San Jose, two teams that, you know, started off with two wins. I think Anibal Godoy, he's been one of the best midfielders in the league this season, you know, scored two unbelievable game winners and just generally been a guy who's dominated the midfield. So he's very impressive player. But, you know, for me, it'll be interesting to see how things shake out in both conferences. I just think that MLS is it's such a fun and unpredictable league. It'll be interesting to see that, you know, if teams have a bad start, can they recover like Seattle did last year, like the Red Bulls did last year? And if teams start out hot, will they be able to sustain that throughout the whole season? So many fun storylines to watch for. Obviously, Minnesota, I'm hoping that they can get better. And, you know, hoping that they can prove that these first two games, you know, they're just anomalies. And I think they will get better. I think that's the one thing. For sure with Minnesota, you know, Adrian Heath is a good coach. I know he's a good coach, and I know that Minnesota is going to get better, and I hope they get better because this is a league that every team has a chance to win on any given day. And I think the first two games, Minnesota will learn from it and they'll be better.
Got an email here from Fire PR staff saying, hey, get Dax on the bus. He's got to go to training, man. All right, we'll let you go, Dax. Thank you so much for your time, man. Good luck this weekend against Atlanta. Good luck with the U.S., okay?
Hey, guys, I appreciate you having me. Yeah, it's probably my fault, too. I talk a lot.
You do. It's okay. We like that about you.
All right. You guys have a good one.
Wow, we love having Dax on this show. You can kind of hear, though, Dave, that he's separated himself. The Red Bulls did this. New York did that last year, this year, now.
Yeah, even talking about a team he was on.
Right. I mean, he's moved on, and that's the only mindset he can have because he's got big stakes in his career right now. National team trying to bring the Chicago Fire team back from not the dead, but they were, you know, they were like 4 feet under.
Yeah.
They were not in a good place. Good start for them, but Atlanta United is a really tough test. As I said, 4 p.m. Eastern, Uni Mas in Atlanta. Should be a big crowd. If you're playing, you know, you want to put a favorite on this.
Right.
Is it on Atlanta because they're at home, or is it
still tough? Because I think the reality of this season is every game is going to be a question mark for Atlanta. I don't think you're going to see consistency at any point. I think part of that goes to being a new team. Part of that goes to being based on very young players. And part of that goes to their style.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we talk about it with Houston. You know, we're talking about it with other teams. But they're a team that wants to go direct. And, you know, you may not get one-on-ones every game. It's not really engineered at times. At times, it's like if the game breaks for us.
And five or six games in, teams, and I expect Velko Panabek has thought this way as well, are going to say, well, this is our system for keeping you out of those positions.
Yep.
Like, okay, figure it out. If we're not going to let you do this, what are you going to do? Do you have a plan B?
And I think – and everyone's going to try and force them to that plan B, and at times that plan B is going to be Joseph Martinez and Almiron are better than the guys on your team, and Assad and Villalba. That's going to be plan B sometimes. But the other thing that's exciting about this game is if Juninho and Dax can start to really work together, control possession in that midfield – you can maybe cut off the service for Atlanta. You could start to push them under some pressure. You know, play that ball left to right along their back line. To watch Akam and Almiron just speed away at either end is going to be fun.
I also like the Garza-Arturo Alvarez matchup, and I hope that Dax is in Garza's ear. You mentioned him. He played with Arturo saying, don't let him go left. Keep him outside. There's some good matchups in this game. I want to see Nikolic. I'm sorry. I mean, was that goal off a pass from the other team, basically? I mean, is that an indication of things to come, or is that just right place, right time, or is that his style? He's going to be in the right place at the right time 2-3 times a game. And on the flip side, Michael DeLue, if you didn't go read Jeff Carlisle's feature on him, this is a guy who, you know, at like 20 was working in a Coca-Cola factory in the Netherlands. Made himself into a really good player and a player they're going to rely on. We'll see how he plays in this one, how the Fire do. Let us know if you're on the bandwagon, though. At Extra Time Radio, extratime at MLSsoccer.com. When we come back, we're going to go right into the mailbag.
Fans, we want to hear from you. you're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com or tweet at Extratime Radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
If you want, we could be the runaway, running from any saddle up. Yeah, yeah.
On Extra Time Radio and into the mailbag, our shout out of the week for a listener, Neil Sean Johnson. He says, hey guys, I deserve a shout out. Been traveling Southeast Asia with the girlfriend. Halfway through, I got MLS Live to catch the season opener and every match. Looks like an LA Galaxy fan. I hope, Neil Sean Johnson, I'm not sure, maybe that's like a moniker. I'm not sure. I hope you are listening to Extra Time Radio as well. Otherwise, I don't know how you're going to get this shout out. But have fun in Southeast Asia. Super jealous.
Want a couple pictures of him in MLS gear tweeted at the Extra Time Radio account.
We will definitely retweet those in either the seediest place you can find or the one with the best view behind you. One of the two. Take us in the mailbag, Dave. What do we got?
Let's start with national team. We've already been talking about it. Gabriel Munoz, and he says, seeing Arena's call-ups struck me as positive, if not familiar, but what are some of the biggest surprises for you guys? Here's his list. He said, is Run DMB still up for it? Is Michael Orozco a viable option on the back line? Are you guys happy to see Villafania? No more Chandler, although Chandler is suspended for the first game. So that might be why. Obviously, Sasha, Garza, don't get called up. Bill Hamid, I think we could have expected. But Doyle, for you, does any of that stand out? Does Marcus Beasley or Michael Orozco stand out for you?
Michael Orozco stands out, but I think people need to understand that we're down to our, you know, fourth, fifth, sixth choice right backs for this series of games. I'm glad DeMarcus Beasley is there, frankly, because the U.S. have played scared the last few times out against regional competition, and we need guys who won't be scared, who will have been there and done that, and nobody on that roster can claim that as much as Beasley has. So I'm happy he's there.
I imagine him like yawning in the tunnel on the way in. They're like, oh yeah, okay, here we are in.
Well, you know he's coming out.
Here
last.
We are in San Pedro Sula, and he's like, oh man, I've done this before. Let's go get it, boys. I got this. I got a little nap beforehand. I feel like he's just so chill, so nonchalant.
He is, and I think it'll serve that team well. But to me, this really does come down to Bruce. Can he get them in the right mindset? Can he get them pointed in the right direction? I think he can. He's always done it in the past, but the talent, even with a couple of questionable call-ups, the talent on this roster is unmistakable, and there should be no excuses.
Weeby, when you look at this, and we're talking about it as if it's a given 4-4-2, which means Johnson and Pulisic on the wings.
Yep, that's what I would say.
Who plays on what side? Because that, I think, is part of this Beasley call-up is whoever's playing in front of him has to be confident that they don't have to track back as much so that they can get into the attack.
I mean, I think both those guys are going to switch. I think either of them can play on either side, and you like what either of them does. I just think that for that confusion factor, and as Matt said, kind of in that bucket, they're going to have a little bit of room to roam, and they're going to have the room to go find good starting spots. And that'll ultimately be what this determines. I mean, you have to find good starting spots. If those guys are going to be the creative fulcrum coming in and who can find them the ball, then that comes to central midfield, which is why, I mean, I know the tendency is to go defensive in central midfield, at least with the U.S. in the recent past, and that's why you see a guy like Jermaine Jones on this roster and say, I wonder if he's going to get partnered with Michael Bradley. But that's only defensive in kind of theory. Yeah, in theory he might be a number eight, but I feel like Sebastian Legette and what he's shown with the Galaxy in the last year, I feel like what Nagby can do in covering ground and not losing the ball is defensive.
And show 2 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, so I would like to see Legette or Nagby next to Bradley, and then I just want to see those two guys in the wings do what they do. Both of them can play on either side. Both of them have the tactical understanding to do it. Both of them can adapt. So go out and let them do it. Go out and let them be themselves because you need goals. You need a win.
2 points to drop as well. Bruce Arena, when asked in his Facebook Live right after the announcement, was asked about right back in Yedlin and who would fill in there. His initial response was, well, we could play a 3-man back line, a 4-man back line, or a 5-man back line. So we don't know, but Doyle, it seems like Bruce isn't trying to keep secrets like Jurgen, so it seems like that would be unlikely. Let me ask you this question. We talking about central midfield. We got an email in here from Christian Brown talking about Kellen Acosta's free kick, and he's talking about, we haven't developed that Messi, but are we potentially developing the Gerard Seedorf or Yaya Toure.
Oh, my God. How many names can we link with him in this
U.S.
show?
National team.
Just stop. We're developing Kellen Acosta. He looks really good. That was a big game, the Pachuca game. There aren't a lot of 21-year-olds in the history of U.S. soccer who could have walked out onto that field and been the best player. And he was. And I think we should just kind of enjoy that. And hopefully he'll pair well with Michael Bradley and make the position his own. But I worry about getting into these kinds of comparisons because it doesn't always set the conversation down a productive path.
Doyle, what about Honduras? What about Panama? Is he the guy to partner Michael Bradley? I mean, he stepped up in a big moment just because he's young.
My guess, like knowing Bruce's past, my guess is he will go with Alejandro Bedoya because Alejandro Bedoya has the most experience. And that's what Bruce has always sort of bought into. He has a very full trophy closet, cabinet, whatever piece of furniture.
The trophy closet, that's very humble.
He's got so many trophies, he keeps them in a closet because they're scattered all over otherwise. So I think you got to kind of trust him. That said, based on form, Kellen Acosta is the best central midfielder for the U.S. national team right now, and he should start. But it's not a scandal or an idiotic mistake if he doesn't. There are other good options in this team.
Incredible that we're talking about it like that. Hey, we got an email that just came in right here for Doyle. It's Andrew in the green room. Who plays right back? Or is there a right back?
I mean, this is a tough one because, again, Lehigh is hurt. Yedlin, who's the obvious starter, is hurt. And Chandler is unavailable. And you would never want to play him in Central America anyway because he wilts if it's over 60 degrees. I think, honestly, with this squad, I would put Fabian Johnson there. And I know that goes against everything Bruce has said. But I want the Cameron Brooks pairing in central defense, so that takes away one potential right back, and I don't trust Michael Orozco to play as a right back in a four-man back line. He's been very good as a right back in a three-man or a five-man with Tijuana, but every time we've played him as a true fullback for the U.S., he has not been up to the job, and we can't have guys out there who aren't up to the job. I think, honestly, with this group, I think it makes more sense to play Fabian Johnson there.
Let's move to another national team. Canada doesn't have World Cup qualifying, but they got their Gold Cup draw. Honduras, Costa Rica, and French Guyana. There's a rumor out that Octavio Zambrano, former MLS head coach, could be the guy announced as soon as this week as the head coach of the Canada national team. Weeby, you worked around him a little bit when you were in KC.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think about that rumor? What would you think about that addition?
I think we had kind of thought that they were going to make this – I've kind of been waiting for them to make this jump, both on the results side, but also in kind of the talent that they attract to Canada, both on the player side and the coaching side, which is not to say Octavio is not a talented coach. I'm just not sure that as a head coach, he has the track record and he has the familiarity with Canadian soccer and kind of the bones and the deeper parts of it to come in and really take them to the next level, which is where they need to get to. They have enough talent to be in the hex. They have enough talent to compete in that kind of, I'd say, 3-8 section of CONCACAF. And they just haven't been living up to expectations. I'm not sure that he is an inspiring choice. He may very well be an effective choice if this is what happens. But I have questions about it, certainly.
Doyle, you're in love with this young Canadian generation. I think you fall asleep whispering to yourself, don't ruin this.
Well, where did Octavio Zambrano go to school?
Did he
Chapman
go to UConn?
University.
Oh, I was like, did he go to UConn? No.
No, he went to Chapman University, which I think is a good sign.
Wow.
Look, I like that Canada have hired a guy who has always had sort of an attacking mindset. I have the same
still
reservations
reports, by
that
the way.
Andrew
still
does.
Reports.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. Still just reports. But some pretty credible reporting. Some pretty credible guys reporting it. So I think it is going to happen. It needs to have better structure from Canada. It needs to have, I think, they need to be braver in terms of how they play, and I think the players want that. I don't know if the coaches of the past have wanted that. So we'll see. You know, they could do worse, but nobody is going to be overawed by his resume.
Look, I think I was coming out here and throwing cold water on this, but it's mostly because I just want the best for Canada and their national team.
But what is the best?
Because the best is being in the hex right now.
For coach, I think you need someone who's familiar with the region, someone who's familiar with the player pool, and someone who understands what the job is. Not a guy that coached Real Madrid and
Canada.
Okay.
For sure. No, what, are you kidding me? I'm not saying bring that person. I'm saying bring in a person that you think will get the best out of your personnel. That might be Octavio. It very well might. Now we just got to watch the results. There's a reason why they hired him, and maybe it's such that there's a little bit of a split with Jason DeVos on the technical side, the grassroots side, and you're saying to him, don't worry about anything but results. And that's the only way this job can be right now, is you have to get the results to take your rightful place in the region as far as resources, as far as players, as far as what you have the capability to do. Canada still has a long way to go. But that's all for us here. Dax McCarty, one of our favorites. I hope he's one of your favorites, too. A big game this weekend against Atlanta. Of course, the national TV game you want to tune into. It's 7 p.m. Eastern on Sunday. Seattle, Red Bulls, FS1, MLS Live up in Canada. Yes?
Facebook Live?
Oh, yes, we are doing that. 6 p.m., Dunseth, Brian Dunseth and I, will jump on Facebook Live, the MLS channel. We will do what Matt and I did 3 weeks ago, which is run through all the games from Saturday, banter a little bit, bring out some hot takes, you know, basically do what I've been castigated for over there in this other room behind us. It'll be a lot of fun. You should tune in. With that, we're going to let you go. We'll see you next week, everybody.
You're listening to Extra Time Radio.